Ron Ananian.
There's something about hot rods. I don't know what it is. And it can be a hot rod of any shape, size, or color. It doesn't matter. But there's something about not driving something off the showroom floor that does something to people.
Car Doctor.
We could get the solenoid feed wire down at the starter, wire in a headlight. If we can light the headlight when we turn the key, then yeah, the starter has power, but it's not engaging.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I bet I could tell you a million different stories today that would just, you know, you'd sit there and you'd say, it can't be real. Like, how do you start this radio show every week, I think to myself? And what is it that I'm going to say? You know, you... And the truth is, I've been goofing off today, right? I have not thought about the week in the shop or anything automotive until about 45 seconds ago. And I did that on purpose because I want to jump up on my feet and shout from the mountaintops for all the things that I saw this week. And I was trying to be unemotional about it, but you can't be. And here's why. I think if you're traveling through New Jersey, and I thought of, how do I do this? Do I do like a shock jock thing? Do I sound dramatic? I'll say it like this. If you're traveling through New Jersey and you're on any one of the major arteries and you're next to a car that has New Jersey plates on it, you're somewhere out of state and you're traveling next to a car with Jersey plates on it, you look over and that vehicle is inspected. It has a valid New Jersey inspection sticker on it. Don't believe it, because chances are it may not be valid. And here's why. We had a customer at the shop in the last 3 weeks. I think I don't remember if I told you this story, but I'll start the story here. 2015 Dodge Challenger. This father helped his son buy the first car. Nice young kid. He wasn't handed the car. The kid worked to put up some of the money. The father helped him the rest of the way. A real nice bonding moment, right? They went out and they bought a 2015 Dodge Challenger with a Hemi in it. And they purchased it from a used car dealer in Central Jersey and brought it up back to North Jersey where they live, and it ended up on my doorstep. The father wanted it looked over. It seemed like a clean car. It didn't have a lot of miles on it. It had 60,000 miles on it, and they just, you know, what does it need? What sort of service would it take, and things like that. We looked it over. Now, a blind man with two seeing-eyed dogs and a cane would be able to tell that the catalytic converters had been modified. They were. I heard it when it pulled in. It had an exhaust leak. And you knew something was up with the exhaust system. And because it's a Challenger, you're thinking, well, you know, everybody wants to make a hot rod go faster. Okay, what did they do? And they did the stupidest thing in the world. They gutted the cats. They cut the pipes, pulled the material out of the cat, welded it back together that it looked like somebody using their feet, not their hands, and, you know, not watching what they were doing, welded it back together. Very poor. And then they put oxygen sensor extenders on the catalytic converters where the O2s come in to help delay the action of the O2 to give the computer a false sense that it was still working. They modified the emission controls. Modified federal violation of emission control tampering, right? I believe 6 months in prison is a potential $10,000 fine. All kinds of crazy numbers and penalties. I explained it to the customer. The customer happened to be involved with a law firm. Thank God for him. He went back and forth. The dealership's answer was, hey, if you can take it and get it to fail at New Jersey inspection, we'll fix the car. That was the carryout. And I went, are you kidding? He took the car. He had his son take the car down to Paramus, New Jersey on Century Road to the motor vehicle inspection station. The kid got out of the car, told the inspector, hey, this car is going to fail, and here's why. And I want you to look at the catalytic converters. The catalytic converters have been tampered with, and the system's been modified, and it's going to fail. He was upfront and honest. He was looking for that failure sticker so he could get his car fixed. The car passed. Flying colors. They looked under the car. They didn't see anything. Trained state employees, right? Factory trained by the state. Hey, what a great job, right? That's why I say New Jersey, the unsafest state in the union. Got a sticker and left. Now he goes around and nobody wants to look at this car. Nobody wants to help him resolve it. He called me. I gave him the phone number of somebody I know at DEP in Trenton. The phone number I'm not supposed to hand out, but I handed it anyway. And I don't care. All right. Because I'm thinking about the time the state audit car came in and they broke my chops over the directional bulb that I didn't see. One was working, one wasn't. And fined me $500. And it's not payback. It's called let's play fair. Let's keep the table even. All right. And by the way, if the state of New Jersey wants to come and talk to me, come talk to me, because I took videos of this emission control system and I've got it locked up in the Google Cloud. I don't think you're getting to it. DEP did the right thing. DEP knew the dealer. They said, yeah, this guy, he's a problem. DEP called the dealer. The dealer called the customer. They said, bring it down. We'll fix it. The customer was very smart. He said, no, you know what? You're going to take the car back and give me my money back because I don't want the car. But look at the drama, right? Look at the blatant, out-in-your-face, obvious failure and fault. You know, it's supposed to be a level playing field. And it's this kind of thing that makes dealerships look bad, that makes repair shops look bad for the guys that are trying to play the game straight. Because it's not a game, it's business. Sell a good car, fix a good car, do the job right. State of New Jersey can't even get it right. They can't even get inspectors at the state lanes to fail vehicles on a consistent, regular basis. It would be, you know, this is that proverbial car that would pull in that in the old days, if it had a cracked windshield on it, something that blatant and obvious, that they would still pass it, cracked windshield and all. Of course, cracked windshields don't fail inspection anymore in New Jersey. As a matter of fact, you don't even need a windshield in New Jersey to avoid getting a sticker. If the vehicle pulls in, the check engine light's not on, the odometer works, it's got the right plates and a couple other little nonsensical things that they're worried about. If that vehicle doesn't have a windshield, as they told me over the phone, Ron, find a place to put the sticker, crank up the side window, put the sticker there, and send the car out the door. So I come back to my original opening statement. If you're traveling through New Jersey or traveling in a car with Jersey plates on it, drive faster because the life you save may be your own. You don't know how safe or unsafe that particular car is. I think that's how I would start the show today. I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but that's how I did it. I hope you liked it. Let's get over to Brian in Maine and kick the garage doors wide open. Brian, I'm fired up and ready to go, brother. How can the car doctor help you today?
Hi, Ron. I'm a longtime listener.
Thank you.
You're my favorite show on the radio.
Thank
I'm
you,
telling
sir.
You.
What's going on?
I'll tell you what. I bought a 2011 GMC Sierra basic work truck, crank up windows. It was a used truck, 80,000 miles. I bought it a year ago. I brought it home after a couple of days. My battery's dead.
Okay.
And I said, so I brought it back today. I bought it from him. He tested it. He goes, everything is fine. Well, I brought it home. I did a parasitic draw test on it. I found out when I pulled the radio fuse, it went down to like 0.7 because it started out about, I think it was 3.24. I don't have that exactly in front of me, but
okay, now,
I was pulling. I think
so. You're set on an amp scale, right, Brian?
I set it on a 10 amp scale on a multimeter. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And,
so it started out at like 3.25 amps and it dropped down to 0.75 amps.
Exactly. And within a half an hour, it dropped down to zero.
All right.
And I've had the same battery in the truck for a year. I've been running it with no radio. I brought it back to the same guy to get an inspection sticker. And, you know, I just told him about it. I said, you know, there's something wrong here with this radio. And I was wondering, and he told me to go buy a radio for $200 and put it in, you know. So, but I was just wondering, have you run into this?
Well,
is it a common thing with a GMC truck, these stock radios? And what would you recommend I do?
Let's.
I don't want to monkey around with my electronics.
Yeah, all right. Hang on a second, Brian. Let me get in here. Let's back up a second. First of all, I want you to do this test. I want you to set your multimeter to milliamps. I want a more accurate reading. All right. So
okay.
You'll see 3,200 and something milliamps for your initial draw, and then you'll see it drop down to 70 milliamps, okay?
Okay.
And,
yeah.
You know, the number is, all right, the number is anything less than 50 milliamps is an acceptable draw. So,
okay.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I heard you say that within 30 minutes, it drops down to zero.
Yes.
Well, zero is an acceptable number, and within 30 minutes is an acceptable time period. Just,
I'm saying is, but I pulled the fuse and I don't use my radio. I've been running around a year without the radio, without the clock.
Okay.
Starting to get to me, you know.
Okay. Now maybe you've got an intermittent fault because you can't. When you had the 7-10 straw, all right.
Yeah.
Did you pull the fuse then, or did you wait 30 minutes for the test to complete?
No, I pulled it. That was fine. Are you still with me, Ron?
Yeah, I'm here, babe.
Okay. When I pulled it, it immediately went down to the 0.7 from the 3.24.
Okay, well, wait a minute.
I knew it was the radio, and then...
Wait, hold. Time. You hook up a milliamp meter, all right? Don't touch anything, all right? You have to give the vehicle time to time out. A modern car could take anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes before computers are going to shut down, giving you an accurate reading. I'm not saying you don't have a draw. It just sounds like you've done the test wrong. Because if you're telling me you had a, if you're telling me you had a 3-amp draw, we'll round it off. You had a 3-amp draw, and within 5 minutes, you're pulling fuses trying to see what makes it go away. Is that what you did?
Yeah, exactly. And then as soon as I pulled the radio, when it went way down,
because the radio circuit was the one that was on. So here's what I want you to do. Okay, hook everything back up, make everything work again. All right, hook your milliamp meter up. Disconnect one of the battery posts. We could have a conversation about positive or negative, which way you want to believe the ions flow. But we don't have time for that today. Yeah. Just hook it up to one of them. You know how to do a milliamp draw test. You did it a year ago, right? Hook it up.
Yeah.
Take the keys out of the ignition. Close the hood, all right? You're going to have to lay the meter on the windshield, long leads out the front. Lay the meter on the windshield, close the hood, close the doors, leave the driver's window down. It's easier to get in and stick your head around if you have to look at anything, all right? Make sure all the doors are closed. Make sure there's no battery charger plugged in. Make sure there's no other accessories plugged in. Let the car sit up to 60 minutes. What kind of a draw do you have at the end of that 60-minute time period without touching anything? I'm not saying you don't have a draw. I'm not saying you don't have a draw. What I'm saying is, I'm saying that you may find that you have a draw in a different circuit. It's not radio related, but that's how you diagnose it. Do that. Call me back, 855-560-9900. Ron Neaney, the Car Doctor, right after this. Don't go away.
Little GTO, you're really looking fine. And a 4-speed and a 389.
Need advice on how to maintain that classic GTO? Ron is the guy. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Hey, let's get over to William, Newburgh, New York. William, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
All right, I got a 2002 Ford Explorer, about 170,000 miles. The car sits. It's not a primary vehicle.
Okay.
The problem is it's not starting. The starter doesn't make any noise. You turn the key, nothing, not even a click. The battery's good. The headlights are good. I did replace the starter. The solenoid lead has no voltage when the key is in the start position. Your suggestions.
Okay, so the first thing you need to know, Not to make this difficult, but you've got the 1 year where there could be a late build or an early build Explorer when it comes to starter wiring. Ask me how I know. So, so some of the diagnosis might change a little bit here, okay? Now, in the battery junction box under the hood, all right, which is battery fuse box number one, fuse number 12, all right, is fuse number 12 good? First question, okay? Does fuse number 12 show not just continuity across it, but do the terminals of fuse number 12 in that battery junction box under the hood show good contact? How long has it been since the vehicle started?
Oh,
5 months, six
maybe
months?
Maybe like a month.
Okay. So, the other thing to think about is because the vehicle sat, do we show any signs of critter intrusion? You know, varmints in vehicles. You got to think about it, right? Was it outside? Was it out of the house, or was it in a garage?
Outside. There's also an additional problem.
Go ahead.
That may be related. I don't know. I had a fuel pump that was malfunctioning. Replaced that. Then it worked. But the starter did give me problems prior to the replacement, meaning sometimes it would start and sometimes it wouldn't start. So what I'm getting at is I think it's got to be an electrical issue.
Right. It's just a continuation of a different problem. What makes this a little bit out of the box, so to speak, to diagnose is the ground for the starter relay. I mean, it's a pretty simple circuit, right? The key comes on, it energizes, but the key on energizes and tells the engine computer that you want to start. You're not directly controlling the starter relay by key. You're controlling the starter relay by the PCM. When the engine controller thinks that William wants the starter to engage, it grounds the ground leg of the starter relay to close the circuit to apply feed to the starter motor. All right? So it's not a direct contact. Do you have a scan tool by chance?
No, but I could get one.
Get one. Plug it in. Go and look to see. You'll find the Prindle position or the Prindle pit, park, reverse, drive, neutral, and all that. Does the computer see the vehicle in park? All right. If it doesn't see it in park, if it thinks the vehicle's in reverse or drive, it'll never engage the starter. You won't even have power going down to that leg, which is what you're describing to me. All right.
Good point. All right.
Now the next thing is, while you've got the scan tool hooked up, scan it for codes. Do you show any faults in the anti-theft system? An anti-theft event, if it thinks that you've got a bad key, wrong key, or somebody's trying to steal William's 18-year-old Explorer, which I'm not sure why anybody would, it'll put that vehicle into a no-crank situation. Do you have a no-start condition going on? All right. Specifically, you're looking for, I believe it's a B1608 fault code. Oh, I'm sorry, 1681 is what you're looking for. All right, telling you that there's a theft light. Is the theft light flashing by chance? Did you notice?
I would have to check.
Okay, take a look at the theft light. If the theft light is flashing, it thinks this is a theft event, and it won't let the starter engage. Okay?
Now, if I disconnect the battery for a certain amount of time, would that reset it?
No. If the fault's there, if it's a hard fault, it's a hard fault. And then the other thing to think about is, especially on an older vehicle like this, as they age, one of the things I've learned is grab yourself a wiring diagram. There's a fuse in the underhood fuse box, which is number 2. I think it's fuse 29, which is part of this circuit. I take fuses out, and I look at them very carefully. I turn them over. Does anything look like it's got a burnt contact or a corroded contact? We always start at the fuses, right? And then we trace the circuit out from there. And, you know, it's possible you've got a bad starter relay, but before we go there, I want to know, since there's a PCM involved, does it see park? Does shifting it into neutral change anything? Does, you know, if I find the ground leg of the starter relay from the PCM, can I measure voltage there? Can I measure signal? A couple of things to look at. Call me back. Let me know, William. I'm here for you. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's on the case right after this. Don't go away. The Car Doctor at 855-560-9900. Larry in Virginia, 05 Lexus. Larry, how can I help you? At your service, sir.
Well, I have a Lexus SC430.
Okay.
It's from 2005.
Right.
It has these plastic panels underneath it that are water splash guards, I guess, for the engine and part of the coolant system, I guess.
Right.
Anyway, they attach to the bumper up front by something that's fairly prominent, and the car is very low to the ground, so As you ride up over any sort of a curb or bump it, it damages those brackets up front that hold the plastic in place.
Right.
Well, eventually they wore out. The plastic panels dropped down, were scraping, and got destroyed. So right now I'm driving around without the plastic panels. The bumper, you can't tell. Bumper looks great. It's just underneath that those brackets are missing. So my question, and remember, this car is already 15 years old.
Right.
So my question is leaving those plastic covers, engine covers from on the bottom, leaving them off, is there any consequences to that at this point?
Did you walk to school, Larry?
What's that?
Did you walk to school? or did you take the bus?
No.
Okay. So you took the bus. And when you went out on rainy days, did Mom tell you to wear your boots and galoshes, or did she let you go out in your sneakers? I have a point.
No.
No.
No, I went in galoshes, yeah.
You went in galoshes, right. And your feet stayed dry and warm, right?
Well, not always, but yeah.
Yeah, most of the time, right. Well, those plates are kind of like the galoshes, all right? They keep the water off the engine, but more importantly, they're keeping the water off any electronics that are down there, switches, wiring harnesses, and, you know, anything electronic that's down under the car. And even on an 05, there was a lot of electronics. They've got their purpose. They're not there. A lot of people think they're there just for aerodynamics and to protect the engine from road splash. They are there to protect the engine from road splash. But the bigger deal is they're worried about much about road splash on the engine and corrosive material as they are about, you know, affecting wiring harnesses, connectors, transmission module connectors, you know, anything down there that's exposed to, you know, road salt and debris and schmutz would be the non-technical term. So, yeah, it's pretty important. And, you know, like you wearing galoshes to school, even though you probably didn't go to high school wearing your galoshes, because who did, right? We had to look cool and get our wet sneakers into the history class at 2 o'clock. But, you know, it doesn't care how old you are. It doesn't care what age the car is, right? 15 years or 25 years, if you're going to keep driving the car. Now, if you're going to only drive the car on nice days, you're going to cut down the odds of, you know, something like that happening. If you retire and move to Southern Florida, you're probably okay as long as you're not caught in a hurricane. But, yeah, those panels serve a purpose, and if you can reasonably replace them, you should put them back on. They're going to add to the longevity of the vehicle. You planning on keeping the car?
For a while, yeah. It's hardtop convertible. You can't really replace it. It's
right.
A pretty cool car.
Yeah.
The problem is to replace them, to secure them up front, you're going to have to buy a new bumper.
Okay.
Or at least a new bumper plastic cover. That's
right.
The only problem.
And that'll be a fortune.
Yeah, I know.
Right. Well, so listen, you know, we like to say when we're restoring and dealing with hot rods that there are no obstacles. Listen, I'll tell you a story. I wasn't going to tell you guys this story, but Larry, you made me do it. It's on you today, all right? I had a customer in the last couple of weeks, a 96 old Aurora. Do you know what this car looks like? Do you remember these cars? They were kind of, it's so futuristic. It's kind of like out of 2001, A Space Odyssey, and I'm dating myself. I'm pretending it's 1972 all over again, and I went, what? You know, just a really crazy futuristic looking car for its time. Well, I think I've got the last one left in America, 26 years old, only 70,000 miles on it, but it doesn't run right. She brings me the car 3 weeks ago. It doesn't run right. But it's not there for the check engine light and the misfire. It's there because the top of the fuel tank locking ring has rusted out. And the fuel pump is sticking up out of the top of the tank. So if she fills the tank up, it spills gas all over her garage. So she wants me to fix the gas tank. I want to make the engine run right. How long has the engine been running like that? Well, since 2013. Okay, then. You know, everybody's tried to fix this car. Nobody's been able to diagnose it. You brought it to the wrong guy, lady. Bottom line, all right, I went through the car, figured out that the rust from the fuel pump sitting up top had fallen into the tank, contaminated the whole fuel rail, rotted the injectors. The car needed injectors. The car needed a fuel rail. The car needed a tank, all right, and miscellaneous other parts to the tune of about $5,500 if we went and did it. The problem was, and to Lena's dedication, she wanted to fix the car. We couldn't find a gas tank for this car. And then we realized that there's going to be some other extenuating issues because she's been driving it 7 years in such poor condition. The car barely got up the nose of the driveway trying to get in the door. And my point becomes that restoring cars or driving older cars has its price. And, you know, it's like you said, you can't really replace the car that easy. So if it was, Larry, if it was $3,000 to do a bumper and a splash shield, would it matter? You can't replace the car for $3,000. You can't replace the car for 30. You probably can't replace the car for 50.
I don't know. What's the blue book? Can you tell me the blue book?
No, I don't keep numbers in my head. Go to KBB.com. Let me ask you this question. What kind of car did you drive in high school? This is Larry.
Jeep.
Larry, this is your life today on radio. What kind of car did you drive in high school?
Okay.
What did you drive?
I had a 1968 Jeepster.
Did you like it?
I loved it.
All right. If this was your 1968 Jeepster, Would you hesitate to spend money on it and shape it back up?
No, but it wouldn't be three. It wouldn't be $3,000.
Well, I got news for you. If you were driving your 1968 Jeepster in 2020, it'd probably be $10,000. All right.
Yeah.
And my point is, if you squint your eyes, and if when you kind of nudge your backside down into that seat, and you look at the road ahead, and put on your sunglasses, and kind of give it that the Roadhouse Blues by the Doors on the radio, you're good to go. You know what?
Yeah.
It's your hot rod, brother. If it makes you happy and you can afford it, do it. Just put the shield on it, put the bumper on it, and, just have a good time with it. It's a car. Enjoy it. Don't let it sit in the garage, and don't be miserable with it.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
Oh, thanks for playing, Larry. Appreciate the call today. So that's what cars are. You know, cars are an extension of us. I have a customer, Joe, and Joe's bringing his car in on Monday. He stopped in on Wednesday with the wife's car. We serviced it. When he was picking it up, he said, "Ron, can you help me out and look at Dixie's sun visor in her RAV4? And I went out and I looked at it. And the sun visor keeps, and Joe's a tall guy, and it keeps falling down and hitting him in the head. The sun visor's broken. And he said, "I don't know what to do." He said, "It's going to be expensive." I said, "Well, Joe, there's two things you can do." He says, "What's that?" Well, I said, "There's three, actually." I said, "You can A, buy a new car, which will be $35,000 to $40,000. B, I said, you could take the sun visor out altogether, which won't work because there's going to be moments you need it. Or C, we can spend $110, which is how much the new sun visor is from Toyota, put it in the car, and then you're happy driving it. He said, "Yeah, I like that." He said, "Because I'm going to get this car from Dixie, and she's going to get a new car." The wife always gets a new car. Did you notice that? And as I said to Joe, as I say to all of you, don't drive a car and be miserable. Put a few bucks in it. Enjoy it for what it is. And remember, it's a car. It's meant to be driven, and it's meant to be driven with joy, because it's a great gift to be able to drive an automobile in this day and age. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. Welcome back. Well, I'm Nanny the Car Doctor at your service at 855-560-9900. Let's get over to Gail in New Jersey. Gail, you're on. What's going on?
Hi. I'm interested in buying a Nissan Frontier. And I understand that they're putting the Titan engine into the 2020 model. And the other thing is I'm anxious because I don't hear good things. Oh, they don't stand by their product, that type of thing. So I was moving over to the GMC Canyon. But my question is, how do you feel about this change of engine and the product itself?
Well, first of all, any vehicle you buy is only as good as the guys working on it. So that's number one. And I've always said, and I've always believed, that any repair shop, it's only as good as the techs in the shop. And I don't care whether it's GM, Nissan, Ford, whatever. All right. There's good and bad in all of them, whether it's an independent or a dealership. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So that being said, the first question I always ask somebody when they're thinking about something like this is, I asked two questions. What were you driving before? What's the vehicle you're replacing? And who worked on it?
Okay, I drive a 2004 Dodge Dakota, which I absolutely love.
Okay.
And it's been maintained, serviced by a young man I met when I worked at a Dodge dealer. That was when he was 19. I think he's now, that's 30 years ago almost.
Right, he's 50.
Yes.
Right.
And I'm going to be 80, so you got the picture?
Right, yeah, no, I got this.
Okay.
I got this.
So this is my last car.
Okay.
This one. The Dodge was supposed to be. Let me tell you, when people offer me money, if they only knew how rusted this thing really is.
Yeah, well, I can imagine.
It's gone.
So let
it's
me ask gone. You this. Have you driven both vehicles? Have you driven the Frontier? Have you driven the Canyon?
I drove the Frontier. It was not a, what do they call them, quad cabs now? I don't know.
Right.
The crew cab. I drove the crew cab, and it was fine.
Right.
It was okay. And the Canyon I haven't driven.
Okay. So first thing, you got to go drive the Canyon. And then you have to go back and drive the Frontier at night. You drove it during the day?
Yes.
You got to do a nighttime road test. You always have to drive a new car,
yes,
daytime and nighttime. Because cars change their personalities daytime and nighttime. All right.
Thank you.
They just do different things. The buttons are dark. You can't see anything. You have to reach to look around. You have to, you know, it's there's a different personality between a daytime ride and a,
yes,
nighttime ride. Absolutely, positively. As far as you know, the vehicle, the 20 Frontier is pretty bulletproof. It's a traditional trans, rear-wheel drive, four-wheel drive configuration, whatever you're getting. The bigger engine, I'm not afraid of. That's pretty bulletproof. As far as that's concerned, the Nissan dealers, the two that I know that I work with on a regular basis, they're pretty stand up. They'll actually bend over backwards and work with you. And I think that's just, again, we're back to the individual, you know, the people in that dealership, the life,
yeah,
and the blood of that particular dealership. Nissan, the company, is pretty flexible. Nissan is in my second tier of recommendation. When people ask me what to buy, it's usually Toyota, Honda, Ford, GM. And then we go into the second tier, which is Nissan, Hyundai, and a few others. All right. Chrysler's not in my wheelhouse right now, although the Dodge truck is nice. Chrysler gives an issue with access to service information. And there's some other things I don't like about Chryslers, but that's just a personal opinion. You know, I know a lot of people that drive them that love them. So I think what you've got to do is go back and take some road tests. I wouldn't be afraid of the Nissan. I think pound for pound, that GMC Canyon will give that Nissan a run for its money. I was just looking at a Canyon the other day online just for giggles, pricing one out, and they're pretty competitive. And it's something that I would definitely consider doing. So, you know, that's where you are at. And, you know, go back and take that second road test and let us know how it works out. You take good care, Gail, and we'll see you again. All righty, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, we're back right after this. Welcome back, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor. Let's go over to Jim in Delaware. Jim, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. What are we working on today? How can I help?
Hey, Ron, I have a 2003 Buick LeSabre.
Okay.
It's a second car I got for my mother. We bought it brand new in the 2003.
Right.
And it's in perfect condition as far as the body goes, but of course little things keep falling apart on a GM product. But anyway, what's happening lately is that what happened yesterday, I was just driving it and I was going about 30 miles an hour, and I was just gliding to the red light, you know, so I didn't have my foot really accelerating, and the car just died. And so I was coasting. I could see the instrument cluster come on. It said volts. It was red. And it was like, this has happened before a couple times lately. And I just pulled off to the side of the road, put it in park, started it up. It started right up and just drove away. But, you know, I was trying to figure out, you know, why is this thing dying? I mean, it's not the battery. I get my service, my car repaired at Meineke, which I think is pretty good, the local Meineke. And they said, well, I told them about it, and they cleaned the throttle, they said, or the gas pedal or something like that. They cleaned it. And that's what they came up with.
Okay. So, let me jump in here, Jim, because we got 2 minutes. So when it dies, okay, is this you're approaching a traffic light? Are you going faster than 35 miles an hour?
I don't think so. I don't think I was going faster.
Okay, but you were you traveling at, say, 35, 40, and then as you're slowing down and it gets into that 5, 10 mile an hour range, that's where it cuts
right
out? Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
That's generally speaking.
All right. So does it chuggle? Does it sort of struggle? Like, is it just die clean like somebody turned the key?
This time it just died, but before I was like parked in a parking space. I had the air conditioning on. It was on the max. And then I pulled out of the parking spot and I was pulling onto the road. And as soon as I pulled onto the road, it died.
Okay.
Is this
very intermittent, or would a mechanic be able to duplicate it?
I think they would. I don't know if they would be able to duplicate it if they tried to figure it out.
How often does it happen with you?
It's happened three or four times.
Okay, over what kind of a time frame, Jim?
In the last 3 or 4 months.
Okay. So, a couple of basic things. If the vehicle's been sitting any length of time, check the mass airflow sensor. Take it off. Have them look in it. Are there any signs of cobwebs or foreign debris or matter? Make sure the air intake duct is not cracked, broken, or leaking. Also, consider looking at any of the data stream parameters in the computer. Are they being reset, like long-term, short-term fuel trim? Maybe this is a power issue to the PCM. Do that. Call me back. I'm Ron Anini, the Car Doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless.